DOT says the airlines recovered from December's horrible on-time stats. The Reason Foundation says JFK needs a third parallel runway. And Atlanta's City Council greenlights a new international terminal at Hartsfield-Jackson. This is Aero News. I'm Paul Plack. Thanks for downloading this AeroCast. Here's what's up in aviation for Wednesday, March 5th, 2008. The U.S. Department of Transportation is out with its rankings of the nation's largest airlines for on-time performance in January. The good news is the industry recovered from December's awful 64.3%. The bad news, performance came in below the January 2006 mark of 73.1%. The DOT's Bureau of Transportation Statistics says the 20 carriers reporting on-time performance recorded an overall on-time arrival rate of 72.4% in January. A flight is considered on-time if it arrives within 15 minutes of schedule. As in past reports, things are better in the islands. Hawaiian Airlines and Aloha Airlines led the pack at 94.1% and 93.1% respectively. U.S. Airways posted a 79.5%, with Delta narrowly behind at 78.6%. The worst airline in the January report was United, which reported only 62.1% of its flights were on time. The monthly report also includes data on flight cancellations and causes of flight delays, mishandled baggage, customer service, disability and discrimination complaints received by DOT. You can see much more detail in the print version of this story at aero-news.net. The Reason Foundation has released a study which suggests New York's John F. Kennedy International Airport could reduce delays and increase capacity by adding a new runway between the two existing runways. Even with the new runway, which the foundation says could be safely built between runways 4 right and 4 left, the foundation says JFK would still have runway spacing greater than the parallel runways at San Francisco International Airport and similar to Boston's Logan International. Reason's Transportation Studies Director, Robert Poole, says taking full advantage of the additional runway would require the upgraded technologies included in the FAA's Next Gen Air Traffic Control Plan, which will be phased in slowly over the next two decades. But, he says, airport planners need to start now, since it can often take 10 years or more to get runway improvements through the approval process. Vigo Butler is a former president of Lockheed Air Terminal and co-authored the Reason Foundation report with Poole. Butler says if metro areas are to reap the economic benefits of the growth in air travel, quote, it's important for large major metro areas to start planning to expand their airport capacities based on what these new technologies will permit, looking forward rather than backward, unquote. You can find a link to the entire report in PDF format at aero-news.net. The Atlanta City Council approved some heady spending at Monday night's meeting, voting unanimously to budget about $1.2 billion to build a new international terminal at Hartsfield-Jackson International Airport. Officials of Delta Airlines, the airport's largest user, had earlier protested the size of a contingency fund for the project, but the Atlanta Journal-Constitution reports they remained quiet immediately before the 12-to-none vote by the council. Delta and other airlines support the idea of the terminal, and they'll share the construction costs, expected to total about $1.6 billion. Their problem with the plan, as passed, is allowing for $168 million in cost overruns. Delta wanted a contingency fund of more like $58 million. To paraphrase the line from the Field of Dreams, if you authorize it, they will spend it. Or, as Cyril Cronenberg of the International Air Transport Association told the council Monday, quote, if you give your kid a $20 allowance and ask him to come back at the end of the week with $15, there's no way it's going to happen, unquote. The new terminal will have soaring glass walls and a view of the Atlanta skyline, its own exit off I-75, a new parking garage, and gates for 12 wide-body jets. Together with the 28 gates at the existing international terminal, up to 40 international flights can be parked at ATL at one time, an important key to Delta's plan to expand its presence on profitable international routes. Virgin Charter announced its online marketplace is now open for business to the public, offering customers an organized, web-based gateway to charter operators. Virgin Charter also announced this week Travelocity Business is its exclusive launch business travel agency. Travelocity Business President Leslie Harris explains, Quote, the notion of bringing the power of automation and online simplicity to a historically manual process like private aviation mirrors our approach to everyday account management. We look forward to working with Virgin Charter in the managed travel arena, unquote. Virgin Charter has selected more than 100 charter operators to represent online, including Aerojet, Avjet, Clay Lacy, DB Aviation, ExpressJet, FlightWorks, HoppaJet, JetSource, Key Air, Seagrave Aviation, Sun Air Jets, The Air Group, and ExoJet. Up next on ANN, aviation legend Don Lopez has gone west. Private jets will face tighter security. And Super Sunday in Dallas has nothing to do with football. You're listening to Aero News.
At Cirrus Design, we don't ignore the fundamentals of aviation design. We just give them an ingenious new interpretation. For 3 years running, the Cirrus SR-22 G2 has been the world's best-selling single-engine four-seat airplane. Today, the SR-22 G2 defines the new Cirrus standard model. Why? We'd love to invite you to see for yourself by taking a ride in the new breed of airplane that has taken the aviation industry by storm. To learn more, call 888-750-9927 or on the web at cirrusdesign.com. Finally, aviation headsets have evolved. Clarity Aloft is the next generation of headset design for a number of reasons. For instance, the noise-canceling microphone used in the Clarity Aloft headset is a high-fidelity, noise-canceling electret condenser microphone with performance optimized for speech frequencies in extremely high noise environments. Stage performers and musicians use this same microphone because they must insist on the highest level of sound reproduction. For more information, call 612-747-3197 or check out the innovative Clarity Aloft headset on the web at clarityaloft.com.
We're back with more of your Aero Briefing for March 5th, 2008. On the web, you can find us at www.aero-news.net. I'm Paul Plack. Aero News learned Tuesday that Don Lopez, the deputy director of the Smithsonian's National Air and Space Museum, succumbed to a heart attack on Monday. Lopez had been with the Smithsonian Institution since 1972, when he became part of the team led by Apollo 11 astronaut Michael Collins, responsible for planning the construction and opening of the National Air and Space Museum. Lopez served the museum as a deputy director, director, and senior advisor from 1983 until his retirement in 1993. In 1996, he agreed to return as deputy director. Lopez was an aviation legend long before his work for the museum. After earning recognition as an ace for 5 kills during 101 missions in China, flying P-40s and P-51s during World War II, he became an Air Force test pilot, then went on to serve a combat tour in Korea. He went on to earn a master's in aeronautics from California Institute of Technology and spent 5 years at the U.S. Air Force Academy as an associate professor of aeronautics and chief of academic counseling. After his retirement from the Air Force in 1964, Lopez worked as a systems engineer on the Apollo Saturn launch vehicle and the Skylab orbital workshop for Bellcom Incorporated. Last year, he was honored as one of the living legends at the Gathering of Mustangs and Legends at Reckenbacher Field in Columbus, Ohio. Donald S. Lopez was 84. A memorial fund in his name has been established at the National Air and Space Museum. The family asks that anyone who would like to honor his memory send donations there. Booming sales of business jets have been attributed in part to business executives trying to bypass the inconvenience of traveling through commercial airports. But the growing number of business jets outside North America looks like a security threat to Homeland Security Secretary Michael Chertoff, who fears that terrorists could exploit general aviation to bring in a dirty bomb or biological weapons. Chertoff told USA Today on Monday the Homeland Security Department will undertake a sweeping review of airport security screening over the next 30 to 45 days in an attempt to ease passenger hassles, but also to focus more on the threat of attacks by private jets from overseas. Chertoff says Homeland Security will issue requirements for crews and passengers of private jets to provide their names, birth dates, and other information an hour before takeoff so they can be checked against terrorist watch lists. Screening of aircraft and passengers by U.S. customs agents before they depart for the U.S. could be next. Security consultant Randall Larson charged that Chertoff's plan would be ineffective against terrorists headed to the U.S. from remote locations in Africa or Latin America. Chertoff countered that if you enter the U.S. airspace without clearance, quote, You will not make it into the U.S. without being greeted by a couple of F-16s, unquote. So far, Chertoff has resisted calls for airline-like screening of passengers and small aircraft on domestic flights. March 30th has been declared Super Sunday at Dallas-Fort Worth International Airport, but it has nothing to do with football. The much-discussed Open Skies Agreement between the U.S. and the European Union goes into effect on March 30th, loosening regulations on international flights. On that day, DFW will see the start of new service to London Heathrow by American Airlines and British Airways, and to Amsterdam by KLM Royal Dutch Airlines. Airport CEO Jeff Fegan calls it the largest increase in international air service in one day since DFW opened in 1974. Executive VP of Marketing and Terminal Management Joe Lopano says, quote, "The new international service will put North Texas on a world stage like never before," unquote. Super Sunday will include a multicultural celebration in DFW's International Terminal D to toast arriving and departing passengers and commemorate the new economic infusion for the North Texas economy. But wait, there's more. DFW officials have designated 2008 as the Year of the International Traveler and even created a website with a live countdown clock to the start of Open Skies. If you're insatiably curious, or if you're just as big a geek as I am, find the clock at www.dfwairport.com/openskies. Business travelers in the U.S. Northeast Corridor probably take for granted frequent shuttle flights between New York and Washington, D.C., Philadelphia, and Boston. Many may not know the history, but they may be noticing that available seats are declining. An article in the New York Times suggests they might want to enjoy the shuttle flights while they can. The paper spoke with Joe Brancatelli, who runs a business travel website, joesentme.com, who predicts, quote, "The shuttle's moment, and it was a glorious moment, may have passed," unquote. The idea of hourly shuttles was started in 1961 by Eastern Airlines. You could walk up to the counter without a reservation, buy a ticket, and walk onto the plane. If the plane was full, they'd roll out another one. Other airlines added shuttles of their own, and travel among the four cities was easy and convenient, if not cheap. Today, shuttles are still offered by Delta and U.S. Airways, but they now start with reservations, no guarantees from bumping, and delays through security which are sometimes longer than the flights themselves. Add in the worst congestion delays in the nation, and suddenly driving your car looks competitive. Amtrak has seen business come its way from the decline in airline shuttles. High-speed Acela trains serve New York, Washington, and Boston for less than half the price, but double the travel time of airline shuttles. Perhaps it's no wonder there's a boom underway in the sale of business jets. Still ahead, Diamond adds to U.S. tax incentives with one of its own. An Irish passenger behaving badly diverts a transatlantic flight. And you won't believe why Airbus workers in France will be picketing this Sunday. You're listening to Aero News.
Uncramp your style in a new Citation CJ2 Plus from Cessna. Now with integrated ProLine 21 avionics, FADEC, and a restyled cockpit and cabin. In the CJ2 Plus, you'll carry more payload than you could in the original CJ2. You'll climb and cruise faster. You'll have the freedom to use even shorter runways, and you'll do it all on less fuel. For a sure thing, call 1-800-4-CESSNA.
We're back to wrap up your Aero Briefing for Wednesday, March 5th, 2008. I'm Paul Plack. EADS followed up last week's surprise win of the U.S. Air Force's KCX tanker contract with news of progress on the plane. On Friday, EADS told Reuters it had carried out the first successful test of the KC-45A's refueling boom. The test marked the first time the new fly-by-wire hardware had transferred fuel to another aircraft in flight. It's evidence of the company's fast-track development program. It was less than 2 months ago, EADS deployed the aircraft's wing-mounted refueling pods for the first time. In Friday's test, a rear-mounted air refueling boom system fitted to an Airbus A300 development aircraft passed fuel to a Portuguese Air Force F-16. Under its agreement with Northrop, EADS will supply green A330 airframes from its plants in Europe. Those planes will be flown to a new facility in Mobile, Alabama, to be outfitted by Northrop for tanker duty. That new facility will also do finishing work on the upcoming Airbus A330-200 freighter, which shares much of its basic airframe with the KC-45A. Meanwhile, Boeing will ponder a legal challenge to the Air Force's contract award to its competitor, and unions in the U.S. are going nuts over the idea the U.S. military is outsourcing to Europe. But unions representing Airbus workers in France must be dancing in the streets, right? Wrong. They're planning to be in the streets this Sunday, but with picket signs. It seems the French unions are angry that some of the work on the new U.S. tanker will be done in the U.S. If this year's U.S. federal tax incentive has you teetering on the edge of deciding to buy a business aircraft, Diamond Aircraft is ready to nudge you over the edge. The Recovery Rebates and Economic Stimulus for the American People Act of 2008 provides both 50% bonus depreciation on new aircraft purchases and an expanded maximum $250,000 expensing election for taxpayers who invest less than $1,050,000 in new or used capital assets. The Diamond Tax Advantage Program adds to that a $3,000 rebate on the aircraft to cover the tax and legal services you'll need to take advantage. Any Diamond ordered and delivered between now and April 15th qualifies. Diamond says the savings offered by the tax incentives, combined with dealer incentives, could represent tax write-off opportunities of as much as $300,000 on a new DA-40 XLS. Fred Ailes, president of Premier Aircraft Sales, the largest Diamond distributor, recalls, quote, "Last time we had tax incentives like this, we ran out of inventory long before the year was over, which is why we encourage people to act now," unquote. An Irish passenger on a Delta transatlantic flight did his part to perpetuate stereotypes on Saturday as he flew home from visiting friends in California. Britain's Press Association and the Associated Press cite court documents and FBI statements alleging that 44-year-old Aidan Mackle of Portadown, Northern Ireland, was swearing loudly during boarding and was asked to quiet down. Then he reportedly drank several small bottles of wine on the plane, smoked a cigarette in the lav, and became verbally abusive when confronted about the smoking violation. Mackle is then alleged to have told a flight attendant he was associated with Osama bin Laden and was going to hijack the plane. When warned by an off-duty pilot who was a passenger on the flight that his actions might require the pilot to make an emergency landing, Mackle is alleged to have said, quote, "Okay, I'm a terrorist. Go ahead and land the plane," unquote. Then punched the off-duty pilot. The crew reportedly pinned the man and restrained him while the Atlanta to Dublin flight landed at Bangor, Maine. There, the FBI was waiting for Mr. Mackle. He's been charged with intimidation and assault and is being held pending a hearing on the charges. The remaining 184 passengers continued on their way after a reported delay of about 2 hours at Bangor. And finally, the FAA Incident Database report says the 1949 Piper PA-16 Clipper, quote, "force-landed on a golf course under unknown circumstances, Lincolnshire, Illinois," unquote. Well, we now know the circumstances, and they're not too smart. The Chicago Tribune reports it wasn't a forced landing at all. Witnesses called police when they saw the plane circling the golf course, and the cops showed up just after 65-year-old Robert Cadera set it down on the seventh hole fairway on his third approach. He reportedly parked it, got out with his son, and the two were met by police as they walked off toward a nearby tennis club. Cadera explained that his 14-year-old son, Isaac, would have been late for his tennis lesson if he'd had to travel by car. Police had the plane hauled off to a wrecking yard on a flatbed truck, where Cadera disassembled it for transport home. The FAA may revoke his certificate. He also faces local charges, including trespass, for failing to get permission to land on the golf course. Lincolnshire Police Chief Randy Melvin shakes his head. Quote, "We're all pretty dumbfounded. I don't have any idea what the guy was thinking. He was going to park his plane across the street like nobody would notice," unquote. Worst of all, not only did Isaac end up missing his lesson, but the friend he was supposed to join there doesn't believe his excuse. That's the latest from Aero News. Remember to check out the ANN special feature. Today I'll talk with Wayne Plucker, a 26-year Air Force veteran and now senior aerospace and defense analyst with Frost & Sullivan, about the significance of the U.S. Air Force's KCX Tanker Contract Award. And if you haven't done it yet, subscribe to our AeroCasts. Find them on iTunes, Yahoo, Odeo, and our website, aero-news.net. Or, if you're Isaac, just tell your friend to download right from the AeroCasts link on our homepage to back up your excuse. I'm Paul Plack. Thanks for listening. Have a clear and unlimited day.